Welcome back to the Boys and Bowls podcast. For this episode, Jeff is not with me, but I am sitting down with Paul Gerald from Groundhopper Guides, and we are going to talk about his book, The Groundhopper Guide to Soccer in England. Paul, how are you doing?
I am great. Thanks. It's good to be here.
So Paul is in Oregon, and right before I pressed record, Paul brought up the Portland Timbers. And yeah. I am a New England Revolution fan, which means that we have gone to the final five times in my life, and we have never won. And I even went to a final where I went to the final and we lost in back when it was Golden Goal. So it was in the second OT. I think this is 2001 and we lost to LA. And I remember being there and being like, okay, all right, let's go home. And so that was my lead in to say, today we're going to talk about soccer.
You're old school MLS. I'm impressed.
Old school MLS. Actually, my dad and I went to the first MLS Cup ever. It was in pouring rain and it was at Foxborough. That was the neutral site, the old Foxborough before they have now Gillette Stadium where the Patriots and the Revolution play.
Right.
That was the one I believe DC won. Pouring rain. It was an amazing experience. So yeah, I am as old and I still have that ticket stub. So I'm very OG MLS and I love the MLS. Even though today I think we're going to talk about the colony soccer, or excuse me, we're the colony soccer, but today we're going to talk about
the old country,
exactly across the pond. And so I met Paul through a mutual friend that I actually have here in Beverly. And so how did Ellen went on a trip with you guys to England? Is that how you guys met?
Yeah, she bought tickets through us. Our business, Groundhopper Soccer Guides, is started as a book. And then I found out that you can resell tickets. So I work with a couple of brokers over there. And we also do tours and like travel consulting and stuff. And so Ellen bought tickets. I don't remember which club, but so she bought tickets, went to a game, and then introduced us. So.
Very cool. And so I am sitting here. People can't hear this because it's a podcast, but I'm sitting here and I'm looking at your book, The Groundhopper Guide to Soccer in England. And I have to say, as a soccer fan myself, it is breathtaking how much information you have put in this thing. And so my hat is off. So tell me about the iteration I'm looking, which is the 2021 season. How many more iterations have you had before this? Because it looks like it's something that you're kind of adding layers onto every time you go back to England and maybe you go to a new stadium or you see a new team or you have a new experience or you want to add that, hey, that pub no longer is in existence. This is the new pub. What am I looking at? Is this the third edition, the fourth edition, the 100th edition?
It's the third edition, but really we do it for each season. So normally the season starts in August and ends in May. And so we try to have the book out by August, updated for the current season, which includes, first of all, I've been to more games like during the previous season. Maybe I've made it to some more clubs. To this point, I only write about a club if I've been to a game there. So there's that. And then, but then there's also, as you know, a promotion and relegation. So at the end of each season, a lot of teams change leagues. So a team that I visited and they were in, the championship, now they are down in League One. So I need to update that stuff. And there's updated things for the schedule each season because that changes just a little bit. And also I get to go and have more adventures and tell more stories and pick up more strange little tidbits. Or like in last year's book, there was a song that swept through the country. Everybody was singing some version of Ale, Ale, Ale. And so I sought out as many versions of those lyrics as I could and put all of those in there as well.
I was noticing that at the beginning of the book, and I think this is really good that you do this, because the book I think is tailored for the US audience or the North American audience, where maybe they didn't grow up with soccer or football, as they say across the pond, being the law of the land. And I really liked how in the first couple of pages, you didn't belabor these points because you didn't really need to, but you talk about the relegation and the promotion, which I think for US fans is so weird because in the US, if your team is doing poorly, you hit a point in the season where you say, all right, we want the team to really do poorly so we have a better chance of getting better players. Right. Whereas in England and in Europe and in soccer, basically not in the United States, if your team is not great, they actually drop down, which has a huge financial windfall to the overall club's organization.
Yeah, I always tell people, like, imagine if in baseball, if the worst three teams in the major leagues had to go down to AAA for all of next season. So that, yeah, and there is no draft for players over there, right? So in England. So yeah, if the Pittsburgh Pirates suddenly have a disastrous year and finish last, then next year they're not playing the Yankees and the Phillies and the Dodgers. They're going to be playing like Wichita Falls and Topeka and Sacramento, like the whole year, you know? So yeah, that is one thing that's very different. And also, you know, we don't have multiple competitions. I'll never forget the first time I heard an announcer say that Manchester City's next four games were in four different competitions. And I was just like, what the hell are you even talking about? Like the Steelers don't play in four different competitions, right? So yeah, I explain all that stuff in the book, because really what I'm trying to do is, like you mentioned before, that you're a Chelsea supporter, so you know all this stuff, but you know, people who, I sort of always imagine the typical American fan who started maybe 15 years ago watching the men's team in the World Cup, right? And then maybe they've got an MLS team, maybe they pick a Premier League team, and then they start hearing about this other stuff like the Champions League and the FA Cup and promotion and relegation. Like, what is all of this? And maybe when you decide one day, and I hope you will soon, to go over to a game at Chelsea, you know, when you know all of that stuff, you know more about what you're hearing and looking at. But I'll also tell you which pub around the corner from Stamford Bridge is going to be packed with people singing. What are they singing? You know, maybe they're playing a team that you don't know much about. Well, I've got a chapter on that team too. You know, who the hell is, you know, Norwich City? You know, who is Sheffield Wednesday? What kind of name is that? What's the FA Cup that they're playing? You know, on and on. So really my overarching dream is like that fan goes from World Cup to maybe being a Chelsea supporter, and then gets to a game, has a better time at Chelsea than they would without me and my book. And then the next day gets up and gets on a train and goes to like Wycombe Wanderers or something, you know, like someplace that they've never heard of. And then they sit down and the person next to them at the stadium says, my gosh, you're an American and you're at Wycombe Wanderers. And then you turn around and know something about Wycombe Wanderers. And now you're having a conversation. Like that's the trajectory of the whole deal for me.
I love this so much, because I'm a huge soccer fan, and it's so great for you to say what you just said, because I think you just, you know how when I was growing up, they would say marijuana is a gateway drug, right? And so right. Marijuana or cannabis, as I guess we should say now, cannabis is a gateway drug. Don't do cannabis because it's a slippery road to everything else. The World Cup is that slippery road for a lot of people in the United States that all of a sudden fall into soccer really later in life. I think I've known a lot of people since I've graduated college who I graduated with, and even out of high school, who in high school would have never thought about soccer, but somehow in college they had a roommate who put a scarf on the wall and would get up at 7 a.m. and would start watching these games. And now they're the most ardent supporters I know. But it was exactly that. Maybe they kind of saw their friend following some team, and but then they got a little patriotism, a little kind of like, yeah, this is my team in a World Cup. They played FIFA a lot, so they learned a lot about right. players and teams and managers and colors and the jerseys and how everything looks. And then they followed a team, a top 10 European team, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Chelsea, Man United, Arsenal, the list goes on. And then from there, I am still yet to do that last part, which is go to a Chelsea game, go to Stamford Bridge, which for me would be like my Mecca, go to the cathedral of soccer that is for me. And then, like you said, get on a train the next day and go see another team, get outside of London, which I think is a big part of your book. It's really inviting people to get outside their comfort zones. And yes, you may be a Chelsea supporter, that's cool and all, but you should really go see a Sheffield Wednesday game. Yeah. You should go see Wycombe Wanderers. Right. You should go see these other things that most other people may not see. And at these games, you're more likely as a foreigner to probably stand out. And that will be cool because they'll be more accepting. Whereas if you go to a Chelsea game or a Manchester United game or one of these bigger clubs, there are going to be other foreigners there. I know from people who have gone, they'll go and they'll run into other, you know, Yanks or people from the United States. That's not an uncommon thing. But the story in my head is like, hey, if I go to Wycombe Wanderers game or I go to Sheffield game, or I go to any game in the championship or the first, you know, I'm probably going to be a lone person from this side of the world at one of those games. And
very close to it, because I've been that person, you know, and I can't tell you. And there's this little ritual I go through at some point early in the game or before the game, because I'm almost always by myself. And so I will turn to the person next to me and I'll say something mainly to see if they feel like talking. Cause sometimes they don't, you know, like sometimes they're like, look, this is important and I need to focus on the game and I don't know who you are. So go away. but other times, especially if they're a little older, they will engage in a little banter. And my favorite one was I went to Blackburn Rovers, and about 5 minutes into the game, Blackburn Rovers took a fantastic shot from 25 or 30 yards out that had the keeper beat and beat, but it hit the crossbar and everybody like, oh, and kind of settled in the seats. And I turned to this old guy next to me and I said, that would have been a proper opening goal. And he smiled and he said, ah, that would have been a cracker, just like that. And I remember thinking like, now it's on, right? Now we're going to talk. And within a few more words from me, he said, wait, you're an American. And I said, yes. And then like, how do you know about Blackburn Rovers? And I kind of joked like, well, we do have the internet in the United States and whatever. And so then, so I asked him at one point, how long have you been coming to games? And he said for almost 50 years. So oh. I know that they won the championship. They won the Premier League in 1994 with Alan Shearer, and Kenny Dalglish was the manager. So I turned to him and I say, wow, so you saw Shearer here winning the league. And he like, and now he's sitting next to an American that knows the Blackburn Rovers once won the Premier League, et cetera. So I know who Jack Walker is, who poured all the money into the club in the early 90s, rebuilt the stadium, hired all those guys, all of that stuff. So he and I spend the rest of what was actually an incredibly boring game against Hull City in the rain talking about the history of the game and of his favorite Blackburn Rovers memories, and me talking about how I think MLS compares to England on the field and in the stands. And, you know, just we had this whole conversation because I knew who Jack Walker was, basically. So that's what, and then, yeah, and also, when I told every English person I spoke to that I was going to Blackburn, they said, oh, you're going to get good curry up there. And finally I was like, what is this about Blackburn and curry? Blackburn has the highest ratio of South Asian population in the entire United Kingdom. I didn't know that, but I found amazing little curry houses in Blackburn. So, you know, these are the things. Like if I could take you to England, I would take you to Chelsea. And then the next day I'd be like, right, now we're going to go to Blackburn. We're going to go to curry. We're going to find that old guy. We're going to go down to the pub that I found around the corner and, you know, whatever. So that's the whole experience.
What's been the moment where you've had that interchange with someone else? They've realized, hey, he's not English. Hey, he actually may be from the United States. And someone has gone out of their way, like some grand gesture for like thanking you for coming to their club, or just being really appreciative of your knowledge and your love and respect for their game, because the English did create the game.
Yes,
it is their game. I you know,
and they'll remind you of that. Yes.
Yes.
And they will,
yes.
Some of them will remind you that it's called football, not soccer. That's a conversation that you can have, that, which by the way, my book will arm you for, because they made that word up. We did not create the word soccer and they still use it sometimes.
I reminded about 2 years ago, I was in Brooklyn and we were watching the Champions League final. So this was the Champions League final between Tottenham and Liverpool, which if you haven't seen or you're listening to this podcast, you do not need to go see. It was not an exciting, it
watch
was a snooze
the first,
fest.
Like, what was it? The first 3 minutes or something?
And yeah. And that
you
was
can
it.
Tune out.
Yeah. Yeah. Harry Kane was, you know, came back. He was injured. He could barely run. Liverpool. It was weird. They just wanted to win the title and they won the title.
Yep.
But it was during that game. And it was after it was a British guy said, oh, but you guys don't know what you're talking about because it was called soccer. And I was the one that was like, hey, buddy, that's because it comes from association football. And it was a nickname. So you guys created that and you put those evils on us. And he was like, wow, you're like one of the only people who recently has said that to me, because they know it's part of their history and they started that.
The reality of that, by the way, is that we're not the only people that call it soccer. Like Ireland calls it soccer, South Africa, Australia, lots of places, but it's only us that piss them off, and which I get. We can be a pretty annoying country sometimes, and I don't hold that against them. But to answer your question though, my favorite experience of being sort of taken in by the fans was at the old West Ham United ground, Upton Park. When this is a slightly deep cut on soccer here, you'll understand it, but it was the second leg of a League Cup semifinal against Manchester City. And City had won the first game 6-0. So you're basically starting the game behind 6-0 against the best team in the country. There were probably 10,000 people there in a 40,000 seat stadium. It was a Tuesday night. It was pouring rain. And so it was literally like a non-event, right? But I got to go and I was sitting next to this guy. And on the other side of him was about two rows that had like another seven or eight guys, and then a sea of empty seats all around us, right? So there's this big pod of dudes right next to me. And I turned to him and said something about this being my first visit. And he just immediately, he almost puts his arm around me and he's like, welcome, you know? And at first he was being very English and very sarcastic. Like, you've come to the true glory of West Ham United. We're going to get beat 10 to nothing. It's raining. There's nobody here. You couldn't have picked a better time to be here, you know? But I mean, they took me in and like, I became part of their crew. Like, we went out afterwards to the pub and like hung out and had this great time, and all because, you know, I was an American and had the right attitude and knew the words to their famous song, Blowing Bubbles, and, you know, all of that. So, yeah, that was one of my favorite, even though the game was a total disaster. I mean, they wound up losing 9-0 total.
They lost that game 9-0. So,
well, no, they lost that game 3-0.
Okay, I was going to say,
it was 9-0.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I was like, on aggregate, I get they lost that 3-0, but geez, if they lost the game 9-0, that is brutal.
It was brutal. It was when Sam Allardyce was at West Ham, and it was a disaster.
Yeah, and I ask you that because from my own experience, there's one experience I had when I was in Buenos Aires and I studied abroad there in undergraduate. I was there for about 3.5 months, and I was fortunate enough to go to a couple of Boca Junior games, San Lorenzo game. Wasn't able to go to the stadium where River Plate plays, but I'm a Boca fan, so I wasn't too bummed out about that. But I'll never forget watching the Champions League. Chelsea was in it, and I'm in a pub. And this guy was sitting near me and I'm going insane. I'm like going insane about that, about a game, a play, whatever. It was a Chelsea game. And after that game, there was a Barcelona game and I was following Barcelona at this time. And Messi has just coming up. He's about to literally explode in the next 12 months to win the 6 titles with Barcelona, what have you. And I knew every player on the field. And I shared this story and we just started talking soccer and this and that and the reasons why Argentina can't win a World Cup even when they have Messi. And this guy bought my dinner and he bought my drinks and he spent, you know, what would be the equivalent of if I met you at a bar, you know, imagine you're in the United States and you're watching, I'm in Boston and I'm watching the Celtics and a British guy sits down. It would have been me spending about $120 on his dinner and drinks.
Right.
Just because he knew who the Celtics lineup was, how we play. He was a huge Celtics fan.
Yeah.
And that to me was always really indicative to, I think, what soccer is. And it's something you touched on right before we started recording, which is soccer is the international language. And if you have knowledge of the game or you're open to learn about it, it is a social currency that is accepted in almost every corner of this earth.
That is true. Yeah. And you don't even have to know, the game itself is not very complicated and there's not that many rules. And the beautiful thing is it's exactly the same rules all over the world. So if you learn anything about what a, central holding midfielder is, right, that's the same guy in every corner of the world. And everybody knows what the number 9 position, the central, you know, center forward is to go out and score goals. And like, it's the same rules, the same game everywhere. And there are very common threads in supporter culture, which is what I write about. I mean, you know, like you're not going to see in my book any kind of predictions about who's going to win the Premier League this year, because frankly, I don't care, you know. But when I hear a new song coming out of the stands, that I want to know about, you know, so that's what I write about. And so, yeah, when you were in Buenos Aires, which, by the way, is a dream of mine, like I want to go down there for like 5 or 6 weeks, you know, my beloved Portland Timbers have built almost 10 years of success now signing guys out of Buenos Aires clubs. And so I want to go down there and see this place. And when I get there, you know, imagine first of all, like, okay, there's Boca Juniors and there's, you know, these giant clubs. But when I go to Lanús, you know, where Diego Valeri came from, and I'll know who he is and know by the time I get there, I'll know a little bit more about their club. I don't speak Spanish, but I'll do what I can. Now, anybody in that city that supports that club, I can have a conversation with. And we have an agreed upon thing to talk about. You know, he can tell me stories about Diego Valeri and I'll tell him stories about Diego Valeri and we're off and running, you know, and it's, you're right. It's anywhere you go in the world. If you know the game and you know something about the local club, then you're in.
Well, how many people that go on the tours are like me in the sense that they're a seasoned soccer person. They probably played, they have been a fan of it most of their adult lives or their, you know, their, yeah, most of my adult life. I mean, I started watching when I was 13 or 14, which is ridiculous. But yeah, most of my adult, how many people have been watching like myself, have jerseys, And how many people are just like, hey, you know what, honey, I want to go to England. I think we should go to a game. And I was doing research on the internet, and this Paul guy knows what he's talking about. And I bought his book. And I think that's what we should incorporate into our trip.
There's sort of there's a few different groups of people, and that's one of them is the, you know, and that's often driven by the kids, right? Like, we're going on a family vacation to England. My kid is a Chelsea fan. He wants to go to a game. I don't know what the hell's going on. What do I do? So there's that kind of group. Then there's another group. Yeah. That they are travelers first and foremost, but they kind of get it. Like, when you're in England, you want to go to a soccer game, but they don't know which one to go to. They don't want to spend a crazy amount of money. They often don't want to sit in like the VIP section at, you know, whatever, at Arsenal or something. They're like, we want to go to a real game, you know? So I take them to like Millwall, for example. You know, I take them to lower level clubs and introduce them to supporters of that club. You know, we go to a pub before the game and meet people and hear stories and learn songs and then go off to the game, because that's the kind of experience that they want to have. So yeah, you get people that are like, I want to see Liverpool and I'm going to fly over there, spend 3 days, go to Liverpool game and fly home. Okay. You know, and then there are people that, having done that, now they're curious about something else. And then there are people that, honest to God, you know, that travel like I do, where sometimes I go for 2 weekends, I'll spend 11 or 12 nights there and go to 9 or 10 games in that stretch, you know? So you get people like that too, that are just literally ground hopping, as we call it, that are just trying to tick off as many places as they can. Even then though, I should say, it's fun to know, like, you can never guess. It's one of the beautiful things about soccer, you know, is you never know what the game is going to be like. You know, you can go to a game that looks like, oh, this is going to be just nothing, and it's one of the great experiences you ever had. And then other times, you know, just last week, the big Premier League game of the season, Liverpool and Manchester United, and they went out and ran around for 90 minutes and nobody scored a goal and it was boring as hell, you know, so you never know. But if you can, like, if I tell you Millwall would be a really fun place to go, okay? And if you have any choice in the matter, like, try to see them play one of these two or three teams. Like, if they're playing Preston North End, okay, that would be entertaining, fine. But if they're playing, like, you know, Charlton, or if they're playing, God forbid, West Ham or Crystal Palace, like somebody that they legit hate, that's what you want to do. So, yeah, the atmosphere is really what it's about. So knowing that little piece as well, you don't want to just go to a game. You want to go to the right game.
One of the things in the book, too, speaking about going to the right game, because you're totally right. You could have two amazing teams in the Premier League. They could play each other, and it could be a snooze fest, like you said, between Liverpool and Man United. But you could see Millwall play Crystal Palace, and yeah, they hate each other. Local teams just going at it. I guess my question is about, you said, you know, okay, it's the son or the daughter who loves Chelsea, and they say, hey, mom and dad, when we go to England, can we make sure we go see a game at Stamford Bridge? I want to see my team play. In the book, you're very open, and I like that you're very open about the fact that in the stadiums, it's really not a childlike atmosphere. It's not a family atmosphere, I guess you could say. Whereas, and that's one of the things that actually I don't like about the MLS, because I go to the MLS and I want to stand up and share my candid opinion with the ref about that call. But I can't, because Jimmy's had a birthday party and there's like six kids with painted faces standing next to me.
Right.
And I'm just not going to do that. You know, you have to choose your battles. But in England, you can even see these things on the TV, which you talk about, the hand gestures, all of the things that happen. If there's someone listening and they're like, oh, we're thinking about taking our family over to Europe and we're definitely going to go, you know, into England, into the UK for some time. Well, how do you navigate that? What's your advice on that? And have you had families come through? And is there, you know, I guess if I guess it's kind of like, hey, if someone's going to bring their family to a game, then they know what they're up for. But is there any kind of conversation?
Yeah, they don't always know what they might think they know what they're up for, you know. I hadn't really thought about this before, by the way, but you just reminded me that one of the ways that I compare MLS in England, I'll have to add this, is that at your typical MLS stadium, you've got 90% of the fans are sort of family oriented, largely sober, kind of like not sophisticated, but civilized, like decent acting human beings. And somewhere probably behind the goal is a bunch of rowdy people,
you know,
that are jumping up and down screaming and cursing, right? In England, it's exactly the other way around, where any place you go in the stadium, people could be drunk and screaming words that you thought people didn't actually use in public anymore. But somewhere in the stadium is the family section. And in most cases, that really is a legit family section. You can't drink in there. If you start standing up and cursing, somebody's going to come talk to you. So if you have little kids, you can try to sit in the family section, although it's often surrounded by the non-family section, which means you're going to hear things coming in anyway. But, you know, but otherwise, like, yeah, the question of safety comes up a lot. People like still have this hooligan thing stuck in their minds. And gosh, I mean, I've been to 150 something games now, I think 160, I can't remember. And I've probably
160 in England.
Yeah. And then, you know, maybe there's three occasions that I saw anybody that, you know, like once or twice somebody threw a punch, and a couple of other times, like, but for the wall of police on horses in between the Chelsea and Tottenham fans, there might have been punches thrown. But personally, I loved it. I got as close to that as I could. I was like, this is proper Chelsea Tottenham action right here, you know, at the old White Hart Lane. I mean, what did I come here for? But otherwise, yeah, the overall, the experience of being at a game there, there are several ways that it's different. Certainly the cursing is one of them, but just the overall, like, I call it, I don't know if I can curse here, but let's say the overall.
You can curse here. You can curse.
Okay. So the overall give a shit level at the games is incredibly high. People really, really care, and they know the game really well. And once the game starts, you also, by the way, you can't drink in your seats there. That's a national law. Above like the seventh tier, I think, of the league pyramid, if you can see the field, you cannot have alcohol in your hand. So that's why. So just a funny side note, if you're ever watching a Premier League game on TV when there's fans, 5 minutes before the game and half the seats are empty because they're all out in the corridor just pounding beers as fast as they can. And then as soon as you hear the music and the teams are coming out, there's this mad rush to get to the seats. But once the game starts, people are pretty locked in on the game. Their level of knowledge about the game and the players is much, much higher than at an MLS game. And yeah, there will be cursing and there will be, you know, much waving of arms and screaming, and it has never to me felt unsafe. And I can think of a few times on tours when it almost became funny, you know, like when a 12-year-old kid sitting behind you is screaming things that like would get you smacked in the United States, you know, it's kind of like, well, that's, I think, what we came here for, you know, it's just kind of entertaining.
I think there's a misunderstanding in the United States about what fandom is and what true kind of love and passion for one's team is. Here, I think it plays out in people collecting jerseys and having caves in their house where they have 80-inch screen TVs and all these signed jerseys and glass cases. And they maybe are season ticket holders and they have a bumper plate, you know, their license plate surrounder is, you know, case says Seattle Seahawks or something. And then you go over there or any other place in the world and you see like soccer and it's just on another level from tattoos, aggressive tattoos of famous players on body parts where you're just like, wow, that's your entire leg of that center midfielder.
Right.
To just an overall, I'm not properly explaining myself, but the passion is literally just on another level. And I think it's less of a performative passion, which I think we have here in the United States where everyone has to have all this gear. And over there, it's like, it's dying and bleeding for your team.
It is, especially when you get around a rivalry game. And that's something that's become kind of a hobby of mine now. Like I will literally travel hundreds of miles to watch what they call a derby, a rivalry game. Probably most famously, I went 3.5 hours east of Manchester on the train to Grimsby Town because they were playing Scunthorpe United.
Scunthorpe is one of our favorite teams that Jeff and I talk about.
There you go. Yeah, well, the
crazy
the,
name.
The Scunny lot, as they were called in Grimsby there, you know, very well represented in a cracking atmosphere, as they say. But I was talking to a Grimsby Town supporter who honestly seemed like, it's funny, they have these two minds that coexist. One is, we absolutely hate those guys. I wish the whole city would burn down. You know, it's just like, there's no end to my hatred of Scunthorpe. You know, it's like 8 miles away. And then the other part is like, I'm out of my mind right now. Like, I'm literally insane. It's like, there's 2 or 3 days a year when they're almost embarrassed by the way they act. I mean, I went to Norwich City playing Ipswich Town, which is a big derby out in the eastern part of the country. You know, I watched like Norwich fans sitting outside a bar, game was in Norwich, and some of the Ipswich folks were walking by to get to the stadium and all the Norwich people chanting scum and throwing beer at them. And I was like, don't you guys like get up the next day and think, wow, that was nuts. Like, what the hell's wrong with me to act like that? And, you know, you don't see that in the States. On the other hand, you know, is this a plus or a minus? I don't know. I can also, as a Portland Timbers season ticket holder, by far our biggest rivalry is with the Seattle Sounders. And when we play Seattle in Portland, sometimes some of our seat neighbors might sell their tickets and those wind up in the hand of Sounders fans. And I'll have a Sounders fan three rows away and we can chat and have a good time talking and have a little banter and all that kind of stuff. So are we more civilized or are we less passionate?
That's the best way to put it.
Yeah, because in England, there would be, you know, I was at a game, it was actually in England versus Scotland, a World Cup qualifier. And somebody a few rows up said something in what sounded like a Scottish accent, and they came and dragged him out of the stadium with people trying to get at him just because they suspected him of being Scottish. You know, you cannot mix fans over there, especially at a rivalry game. So it makes for fun, exciting, passionate atmosphere, but also like you guys are a little nuts. Like this is sports. Calm down.
I think you framed it really well, and I didn't explain it earlier, but that's the question, right? Are we less passionate or more civilized? And I don't know.
Both,
Right. It's probably a mixture of both. And I just say that once again, I have not gone to a game yet in England. I will do that. But I've seen games in Colombia, in Argentina, in Germany. And the passion there just seems different. But maybe that's also juxtaposed against all my experiences going to see MLS games, where I haven't gone to a soccer specific stadium yet. I watched the first NYCFC game they ever had, where they played against the Revolution and David Villa scored the winning goal right in front of me. And I've also seen a bunch of games. Obviously I've seen probably more than 100 Revolution games in my life, but those atmospheres are really watered down. One's in a football stadium and one's in a baseball stadium. So I guess there's probably nothing more quote American unquote to see a soccer game in those venues. But I never felt the same passion that I feel when I go to see games in other countries. And I just think you hit on it, and it's really something to be said, which is the overall knowledge of everyone in the stadium is probably about three times higher. Especially in the MLS, like I said, there's a lot of families. I'd say every Ravens game I go to, I look around and I see people who have never seen a soccer game before in their life and their son or daughter's into it. And now they're there and that's great. I'm glad that they're being exposed to it because I think the MLS especially is only going to continue to grow. And I know that this is crazy and people think I'm crazy for saying this, but the MLS is a better product right now and it will continue to be a better product, I think, than the NFL. And I think by 2040, the MLS will have absolutely, which is 20 years away, but 20 years come and go quickly. I think the MLS will be more profitable and more popular than the NFL.
That's a bold statement. We'll have to come back and visit that one in 20 years and see if it came out right.
We totally will. We totally will.
It is definitely growing though. But you're right. And, you know, I've been to quite a few MLS stadiums and there are a few with what I would, usually I'm going to playoff games, so I would see a pretty good atmosphere. And of course, I'm highly partial to Portland and to the Timbers Army and, you know, 6,000 people behind the goal and all of that. At its most fevered, it begins to approach kind of the ordinary rivalry game in England in terms of.
Really? At its most, we're talking playoff passion is a.
Yeah, because there is just something different over there when. You know, like I went last year, everything blurs together now, but there was a playoff and they have playoffs in England for promotion, as you probably know. And so Aston Villa wound up playing West Bromwich Albion in the playoffs, which is two teams in the Birmingham area. They don't like each other and happens to be two of my favorite stadiums. So I went up there and in the second game, Aston Villa scored to go ahead and they were going to go to the final and play at Wembley for the chance to be in the Premier League, which they eventually did. And when they scored that goal to go up, I think 4-2, like that stadium went to a level that does not get reached in the States. Because for one thing, like promotion is just this whole thing with all the money that's involved and you're beating your rival and you're keeping them down in this league and you're going up to the bigger league. And the whole 35, 40,000 people stood up and started singing "Fuck the Albion," just at the absolute yelling as loud as they possibly can. Not like, oh, I think I can hear some, you know, like with the Timbers Army yelling "Fuck Seattle." I'm talking about 35,000 people at the top of their lungs pointing at the other people over in the corner. Cause that's another thing in MLS versus England, like over there, there's always away fans in the stadium. So over here, the away team scores and it's like crickets, you know, and over there you got 3,000 people over in the corner going nuts. And therefore, when you score, you got somebody to point at and call all kinds of names. So there's just not that. Maybe we are more civilized and less passionate, but we just don't care as much as they do. For good or ill, we just don't.
I wonder if it's like a historical thing. And yeah, what I mean is some of these, you know, the FA Cup, the competition has been around 150 years.
Yeah, I mean, West Bromwich Albion and Aston Villa probably first played in the 1870s, you know?
Yeah.
So you're talking about fourth or fifth generation fans, maybe. I'm here because my grandfather was here and he sat over there and now I sit right here and we just don't really have that, you know?
So, yeah,
and I think a lot of it has to do with proximity as well. If you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan and who's their big rival, I would imagine maybe the Eagles or something, like you probably don't know a lot of Philadelphia Eagles fans, or you bump into a few here and there. But over there, you're talking about Tottenham playing Arsenal. I mean, they're like 3 miles away from each other. You know, it's inter-neighborhood squabbles that go back 100 years. So it is truly another level. I will say, by the way, that they – I actually have a buddy who's a Leeds United supporter who's really into Major League Baseball. He's been to every stadium in Major League Baseball. He's a New York Mets fan. I don't know how that happened, but whatever. So he comes over a couple times a year to go see the Mets play. And every English person that comes over here just cannot believe how nice our stadiums are, how well fans get treated, and how good the food and beer is. They're just like, you guys have it made compared to the shitholes we have to go to and eat those crappy little pies and drink bad beer that costs £12. And like, they just can't believe what a comfortable, pleasant experience it is being an American sports fan. So,
you know. So now's your chance to reverse what you just said and make a sell for people to go to England.
No, well, you know, if you want the authentic experience, I always tell people, like, we need to get you, you know, a chicken Balti pie. And if it's really cold, we're going to get you a hot cup of Bovril and you're going to go stand on the terraces and learn some obscene chants. That's what we're going to do.
That's what we're going to do right now.
It's about 3 degrees above freezing and it's raining sideways and you got to walk a mile back to the station after the game. But by God, that's English football. So, you know,
that is English football. Sun, you know, our sunny days are their rainy days as far as training and playing. And one of the things I wanted to say, it was interesting you just mentioned Leeds, because there's totally a connection right now with the NFL and Leeds. The San Francisco 49ers owner had about 15% control of Leeds, and they just bought up shares up to 37%. And so there are definite connections between United States sports and English sports. So with that said, do you have people that go over either on the tours or that have gotten the book that are outside of the United States? Or even outside of, quote, English-speaking countries, but they speak English.
Yeah. Yeah, especially in the ticket business that we do. Yeah, basically anybody who speaks English and is looking online for tickets to one of these big clubs, they can find us and buy tickets. So, yeah, I've had people from Indonesia and India and Singapore and, all over the place. So, because like you said, it's global. And those are always for the top five or six, you know. Nobody from Singapore has ever asked about going to Queen's Park Rangers. They all want to go to Liverpool and Chelsea and Man U and Arsenal. And so it's also interesting, by the way, just to watch that track with how the club is doing. Like, I wasn't doing this when Ferguson was at Manchester United and they were winning everything. But right now, of the top five or six clubs, I get the least inquiries for those guys than anybody else. So, and everybody wants to go to Liverpool.
Really?
Well, Liverpool is the best team, but Liverpool also is a funny kind of a story in that even when they, by their standards, were not very good, right? They didn't win the league for 30 years, and they kind of got overshadowed by their big rivals, Manchester United. They never lost their fan base. Leeds United is the same way, and there's a handful of clubs like this. Newcastle's another one that just seems to be a hopeless situation on the field, but they fill the stadium all the time. So what happened is, like, you know, Chelsea is a pretty recent phenomenon, right? Arsenal just built this enormous new stadium. Manchester United has a huge stadium. So it's like the sort of new fans or tourists or whatever could get into those places, right? Liverpool has always been a tough ticket because they've always been immensely popular. So now you have this combination of an incredibly good team with a really legit, authentic atmosphere that whole stadium, you know, a much higher percentage than anywhere else is people that have been going there for a long, long time. And that makes a difference. Leeds is the same thing. I've been telling people, when people can get back in the stadium, go to Leeds. If you can possibly get to a game at Leeds United, I've never seen an atmosphere like that.
Leeds, Manchester City, now Tottenham, they've all had great documentaries come out through Amazon over the last couple of years. And I know on Netflix, there's Sheffield till, Sunderland Till I Die on Netflix. And so why don't you tell people where they can get your book? Talk about your website. I know you're very active on Instagram. What other social media accounts that people can follow and reach out to you? Like, what's the best place also for people to reach out to you? Would that be through Instagram, or is there an email?
It's probably the website, really. It's the website is groundhopperguides.com. And I guess I didn't really explain what a groundhopper is. You probably
know. What better time than now? Yeah,
sure. So it is funny that somebody asked me what's a groundhopper, and I said probably a terrible name for a business since nobody of my customers knows what the hell it means. But ground is sort of like the British equivalent of ballpark. So you'll hear it sound like an old-fashioned word for a football stadium. So ground hopping is literally just being a soccer tourist or a football tourist, of course, they would call it. So groundhopperguides.com is the easiest. And like I said, yeah, there's the book, which you can buy there. You can also buy it on Amazon. It's called The Groundhopper Guide to Soccer in England. Just make sure it's for the current season because we do update it every year. And then there's a YouTube channel you can find the same way, Groundhopper Soccer Guides. We try to put something up every week or so. And a lot of that is educational. Like right now I'm working on, I just did one that's a guide to all the different leagues and cups in the country. And I'm working on one right now about promotion and relegation. So I try to keep that kind of educational. We're on Twitter at Groundhop Guides. And I think the Instagram is Groundhopper Soccer Guides. You know, just search for that wherever you can and track it down. But yeah, if you buy the book from us, then I can sign it and send it to you.
Perfect.
And yeah, we also sell tickets. So when those days come back around and you want to go to a game, we 100% legal resell or sell tickets, usually like a hospitality package. So like a ticket plus maybe access to a lounge or food or a stadium tour or something that comes with it. And yeah, we lead the Groundhop tours and do consulting. So if you're that guy, for example, who your kid wants to go to a game at Arsenal and you don't know how this works, then I can help you put that whole thing together.
I think that's an extremely important piece that you just added to the tickets, that they are official. I had tickets I thought to the Boca River. One of the biggest sporting events on the planet that happens between rivalries is the Boca River in Buenos Aires. And we got to the stadium and they scanned them and they were fakes. So we were duped out of about $200.
Yeah,
in Buenos Aires, $200 is probably like $500, $600 here at the time.
I had a guy who bought a Liverpool ticket from me because the previous season he had flown over there from Singapore or Philippines or something to go to a Liverpool game. That's why he went. And he arrived at the turnstile and found out he had a bogus ticket. You know,
I know the feeling.
Even when they are legit tickets, often season tickets over there now are usually on a card. You don't get like a book of tickets like you used to. So often, even when it's completely legit, gray area perhaps. But what you're actually doing is you meet somebody before the game. They hand you the card. You take that through the turnstile, and then you got to go find them after the game and give the card back. And maybe you don't get that card until an hour before the game and they insist that you give it back a half hour after the game's over. So it's just this kind of tense, stressful thing. With us, it's like, I'm either going to send you a PDF attached to an email about 3 days before the game, or they're going to be waiting at your hotel when you check in. You know, and I can show you, like, I buy it from a broker and here's their website and here's their name on the Liverpool website saying that they're legit. And like the whole thing is, I don't deal with anything that's not legal.
Yeah, that was one of the darker moments in my soccer fandom career.
I can only imagine. Did you get in anyway? Did you find a ticket?
No. Oh. I mean, because people literally climbed the Bombonera to get in that game. And we just went to a local pub in the area. And that was also good, too.
Yeah.
We met some other people, but I didn't get to go. I saw Boca play in a Copa game, which was great, against Cruzeiro. So I did get to see some really good games, and I saw Riquelme score, and he's one of my favorite players. But the taste in my mouth from that experience, even though it was, almost 13 years ago, I'll never forget. So it's good to make sure that when you go abroad, you get the confirmed tickets.
Right. And it's a strange world over there, too, because technically reselling a ticket is illegal. Over here, I think it's illegal if you jack up the price. But over there, it's just straight up illegal. But what that technically means is if I go buy four tickets and take three friends of mine and we all go to the game, in theory, I just broke the law. But that's not what they care about, you know? So, yeah, there's this whole world, like even Ticketmaster, but StubHub, kind of a gray legal area over there. But they're based in Switzerland, see? So it's like if you buy tickets from StubHub, then that transaction didn't happen in England. So it's kind of legal. I don't know. It's all very up in the air.
And now with Brexit, that's a completely different geopolitical.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. I hope that doesn't mess up travel. Because my plan at this point is as soon as we can go to games again, like by the end of this year, I plan to not completely move to London because of like visa stuff and everything else. But yeah, I'm going to pick up roots and go full digital nomad here. And by October, be based in London and stay through the end of the season. Because for one thing, just to be over there and do more of this and do more tours and everything and just immerse myself in it. But also because I think the next kind of level for the business is the big European clubs. Like my brokers that I work with, I mean, I can sell tickets to Juventus, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, and all of those clubs. So go over there and maybe do a book about Europe and start expanding the business that way, you know, do Champions League tours. So, you know.
Well, I'll be following along at Groundhopper guides. This has been great. Paul, thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, you as well.
Thanks for listening to the Boys and Bolos podcast. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Patreon, Twitch, at Boys and Bolos.
If you'd like to be a guest, please reach out. You can hit us on any of the social media accounts that Jeff just mentioned, or email us directly at boysandbolos@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening, and see you next time.